Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. This episode is brought to you by New Era. New Era is the official headwear provider of the MLB, NFL, and NBA. If you love to rock New Era caps as much as I do, then you don't want to miss this opportunity to wear what the players wear and get 15% off when you go to neweracap.com/AOTC and use code AOTC, all lowercase, at checkout. That's 15% off your order using promo code AOTC. On today's show, we have on Chris Razzo, head baseball coach at Heartland Community College. Chris is fresh off leading the Heartland Community College baseball team to a national title this past season. He was also named the 2023 ABCA National Junior College Athletic Association Division II Coach of the Year. Under his leadership, the Heartland baseball team has made two appearances in the NJCAA Division II National Tournament and won it this past season. He joined the staff in 2018 serving as the pitching coach and became the interim head coach in the winter of 2020. As a player, he spent 2 years as a Heartland Hawk before moving to Illinois State University, where he was drafted by the Milwaukee Brewers in the 24th round in 2013. While at ISU, he was selected as the MVC All-Conference First Team and won Pitcher of the Year. So on the show, we discussed the national championship run from last year, what it was like being named interim head coach at semester and during COVID, and why they value winning first and development next. Here is Chris Razzo. Chris, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm excited to get to record with you today and get to learn from you. And so what I did in the series that we've been on is just national champs from last year. And so, you know, I first want to start off with, you know, congratulations on the numerous awards that you won this past season. And I think that it's really neat to be able to read that, and the listeners got to hear that in the bio. But tell us a little bit about last season. What was that group like? And just kind of roll from there.
Yeah, last year was obviously pretty special. That group of guys was one that I don't think I'll ever have to that caliber, both on and off the field. I think it's been an interesting transition, obviously, of not having that core group anymore. But at the same time, you know, that's the good and bad to JUCO is it's a constant revolving door. It's always been interesting because obviously winning a national championship, it's the ultimate goal. It's what everybody's striving towards. And last year, that group broke our school GPA record for baseball and had all these other random accolades that even if we didn't win the whole thing, it probably would have been one of the most successful seasons in our school's history. But obviously, nobody really cares about that when you win the whole thing.
So, you know, with that, like, let's talk a little bit about, I want to rewind from when you first got the job. So I noticed online that you were the interim and then you were promoted to being the head coach. What was that? What was being the interim like? Like, I'm sure that you're fighting to keep the job, but tell us a little bit about what it was like being thrust into that moment and then kind of how you navigated that season, because I'm sure, you know, I don't know if you were prepared to be able to take that leap, just mentally. I'm sure you were prepared, to be a head coach, but, what was it like being put into that role? And then kind of take us a little bit about, you know, how you, if there's anybody, you know, going through that this season, which I'm sure that there are some listeners that are, since we're recording, you know, in December. Tell us a little bit about how you navigated that, how you won that role, and then any advice that you have in regards to different guests or different listeners that are going through that.
Yeah, I think that was a interesting time for sure. There's no doubt. I by no means would say I was necessarily prepared for that type of kind of responsibility I got thrust into. You know, Jimmy Franco's brought me on here to be the pitching coach. And eventually we all kind of knew that he would probably move on to the higher level because that's kind of always what he wanted. He told us forever he would never leave in the middle of a season unless his dream job essentially opened up. And that was getting a chance to coach at his alum, which was Iowa. It ended up happening in December. We were working a camp and he just kind of said, "Hey, coaches, like, I got an opportunity I got to take." He informed me that he had told our athletic director he was hoping that I would be the one that could take over and kind of lead the ship through that year. And so once the team all comes back, obviously I have a nice team meeting with them. And to be honest, that group was a very special group prior to the season even starting. You could just kind of feel there was something about them that they just had a lot to prove. Again, by no means do I think I was necessarily prepared, but I think as it started kind of all just evolving prior to us getting ready to take our first trip and just first games and all that, it's weird how much I think you kind of do learn by trial and error. I just kind of get thrown into there and, all right, here's generally what you think about and you hope mm-hmm. it kind of works out. And then COVID happens and our whole season's canceled. I'm down in Florida and we're eating at a Jason's Deli and I get a call from my athletic director. It's like, don't react, but your season's canceled. You need to get home. And it was like, all right, welcome to coaching.
Brutal.
And so then from there, it was my first, I guess, big thing with coaching is getting to tell a bunch of guys who have bought into an interim coach that our season's canceled. We were 7-2 and just, again, that group was something special. And I think we would have had a legit shot to make a run at it that year, which was just devastating from that standpoint. And then the process started of, you know, are they going to drop the interim tag? Because Heartland's history speaks for itself from the standpoint of they were going to have a ton of candidates if they wanted to go that route. I think my background of actually playing here obviously helped. I was close to this place. This place has always been very special to me. And I think the administration here kind of removing me as a player and realizing that I'm not the same person I was as a player as I am as a coach. Cause to be honest, if I had to coach myself, I don't know how I would have handled that. You just kind of learn to adapt and evolve, the transition. And I think the biggest part for me, and if anybody ever gets in that type of situation, you got to have your core values and core beliefs, and you realize how much you've truly learned from coaches in the past. And you kind of buy into that philosophy. And to be honest, if they decided to go a different route other than me, I wouldn't have had any ill will towards it because I firmly believed I did everything in the direction I kind of wanted it to be. And then the evolution quickly happened of, I knew what I wanted big picture wise here. I knew what I thought I could make this place into. And I had some things kind of in place that with our recruiting class coming in, that next year, I just knew things were going to be going in the right direction. And then getting the opportunity to have some of those guys come back for a third year because of COVID, everything just started lining up where I could just kind of feel it happening, where I didn't know how long it would take me to get things going in the right direction. And it obviously didn't take too long. And now it's just kind of rolling.
No, I love that. So let's, you know, flash forward to, you know, you guys win a national championship and, you know, you go through the summer. What was your process like there? Because, you know, you sound like a guy who's continuing to try and get better, and then you win the biggest thing in the sport. So what was your summer like of, you know, you're recruiting your class, and then you have probably half of your team is leaving because it's, you know, junior college. So tell us a little bit about how you won this summer, and then we'll get to some player development stuff after you do that in the fall.
Yeah, we were obviously very interesting how the summer is going to be because we've never won the whole thing. We've always had the pedigree of moving guys on. That's always kind of been our MO. And when I took over, it was now we're going to shift it to winning and the moving on takes care of itself.
Sure.
Everybody kind of knows you're going to develop here. And so I think as we were going out on the recruiting trail, it oddly became definitely easier. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It makes guys who just have that deep-rooted kind of, I just want to win. It's tough for them not to at least consider us more so than obviously every other school. It, however, did get a little tricky because we got to be a little bit more picky. And so the recruiting process almost went deeper than just the talent, where getting some guys on visits and having real conversations with their parents and just watching the interaction of the player, not necessarily on the field, but kind of off the field, to make sure that they were willing to kind of jump into uncharted territory. Because I think it takes a special kid to want to be somewhere that not necessarily wins, but it's like you're going to have the target on your back more so than you can ever imagine now. And that takes a certain type of guy where if you, I don't think, have been around it, you don't really know what that's like.
Sure.
And for some guys, I think it would chew them up and spit them out. And it's just like, pressure is a real thing, and some guys kind of crumble, and some guys you have to teach it a little bit too. But I think that's kind of been an interesting process. And obviously we lost one of our head assistants as well, who went to Bradley. We're very happy for him. And we just kind of bumped up our other assistant who's been with here the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so then the evolution of finding another assistant, which again, I believe was pretty easy from a pool, but it was making sure we're getting the right guy. And I think that's kind of, everyone's kind of realizing I'm very picky on culture over everything. And I firmly believe that is always going to outweigh talent or ability, is the culture wins you more and more. It's just, that's why this sport's special, is because you get the right group of guys around each other, you're going to find a way to win.
No, that's really good. So let's stick on that for a few minutes and let's talk about, you know, the process of building culture. So you take the interim job and then you're named the head coach several months later. And so tell us a little bit about how you started to put your stamp on it. You know, you talked about taking care of winning, and then the winning would get guys promoted to 4-year schools. But tell us a little bit about how you started to really just use the culture that you already had, which was a good one, but also put your stamp on it, and then how you continue to teach it on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think for us, there's always been a philosophy here at Heartland that it was, you know, there was 5 things every single guy looks at or comes from when they're coming to Heartland. It's for that first Division I offer, for the better Division I offer, for the development side of just looking for any kind of opportunity to play at the highest level, and then get drafted. And the last one was always winning. And we kind of took that philosophy and just flipped it completely around, where you start from the bottom, work way up. It's like you win games, then you get the opportunities, then you want the bigger Division I's, then you want the opportunity to possibly get drafted. It's just one thing compiled on top of the other. The hardest thing was a lot of guys that kind of were here, which are all good kids and crazy talent. It was just getting them to truly buy into, stop worrying about your development, let it take care of itself, because it will. Hyper-focus on winning. Because if you hyper-focus on the development of, oh, I have to do this because 5 years from now, that's what's going to benefit me, you're just going to be burned out. You're going to struggle. It's about having kind of the flexibility where we always talk about. One of our huge things here is we just say adapt. Adapt to whatever it takes to win. And that kind of shows where you eventually get to the level of you have to refine the skills and everything. But it's like right now we are learning to walk before we run. And I think from a culture standpoint, the group very quickly realized, and I think the whole entire athletic department quickly realized, that it was not necessarily my way or the highway, but it was, oh, the baseball team is definitely going to be that group that there is zero room for any kind of, if he's not bought in, he's gone. And that obviously is going to rub some people the wrong way. But I've always been a firm believer in, you're going to always get the truth no matter what. It's very rare, I think, in this sport, especially at the college level, where, you know, to a fault, I'm going to be honest to every single player. There is no BS at all from, oh, we'll keep doing you and you're going to have an opportunity. If they're never going to play, I'm going to let them know that. And if that means they have to find a new school because we just think that's best for their career, like, I'm going to have that conversation with them. I'm not just going to keep them around just to keep them around. And I think that's what kind of got everything rolling in that direction. And now it's kind of just, again, like I said, it's oddly self-sufficient of one group just tells the next group and they're like, yeah, like, yeah, that's just how we do things here. It's just kind of different.
Sure. No, I like that. And being a truth teller, it's probably not easy in the moment. And, you know, but it's good for all of us, I suppose, especially said with love. You know, and when, can you give us some different practical examples of, you know, you talk about trying to put winning first. And was there anything in actual practice or like player development on a field that you guys decided to do different because this was the first thing that you guys wanted to implement?
Yeah, there was a pretty big example of when I had first taken over, we emphasized immensely, you know, the old Bill Belichick of just do your job. Whatever your at bat is, if you're up there at the plate and your job is to get that guy to third base, if it looks like you're not trying to do your job, I'm not going to have a problem pulling you. And we had a kid who got on second, nobody out, we're down one run. He by no means is a power hitter. And I watch him pull off of 2 balls, trying to hit him 500 feet. Then he runs into one, ends up giving us the lead. I ended up pulling him and just having the conversation. Obviously, I'm happy he hits a home run. I'm obviously happy we're up in the game. But it was very evident he was not at all trying to do his job, which is what we have kind of talked about 24/7 for every day of the whole entire philosophy. And I think from that moment on, that player obviously kind of took it to heart. Obviously, you get yanked after hitting a home run. You're a little confused. And it was a tough conversation. But I think that showed to kind of everybody that's like, that is exactly what we're looking for, is you're going to have times and opportunities to get yours, because this is a very, if you get your numbers and you have good games and everybody has that mindset, yes, you're going to win games. But everybody can't be trying to get theirs all the time, when sometimes there is, get the sack bunt down. As much as everybody hates bunting, this game just kind of rewards you as long as you're doing your job. And I think, again, full circle back to what made last year's group special, there's a reason we had a kid leading the country in hit by pitches. There's a reason our best hitter, who was the National Player of the Year, was sack bunting at the World Series. Now, I by no means was telling him to sack bunt, but that's just kind of what he had bought into wholeheartedly. It was, we're up two, let's get up three and get this guy to third base. I'd much rather have him hit, but that's just, again, yeah, that's the type of kid he was.
Sure. No, and so, you know, obviously you guys got the dog pile in Oklahoma, which I can appreciate since I live here, which is cool. So, and it's a great ballpark, by the way.
Yeah. I was part of the first team at Heartland that ever actually got to go to Enid as a player. And so that was my first time experiencing it, which was, you know, 11, 12 years ago now. And then getting to go back the last couple of years, it's hard to describe to people the feeling of that place. And it just kind of has this aura about it of, you just can envision being out there and you can envision everything kind of happening the way it did, and getting to dogpile out there. It's like, it just feels like a place that you're supposed to dogpile at. And so it does have, and that the community out there, it's just, it makes it special. It does make it very special for the guys. And I don't know if being out there for 11 days and playing four games was exactly ideal. But the weather and everything made it pretty interesting for us. And it just, we made it work.
Yeah. The with Oklahoma weather, they say, if you don't like it, just wait a couple of days, 'cause it's going to change. So
yeah, it was impressive with some of the older gentlemen in the stadium who would predict, like, you're not playing today, and they're just walking out, and then 4 hours later, game gets canceled. I'm like, that guy just knew. Like, they just know.
And it's turf too, right? You're like, you know, that's funny. So let's get into, you know, let's talk about, you know, with this group that you have. So we're recording this. You guys are you guys on winter break yet?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. So you guys have gotten a full fall in. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what the messaging was when guys got back, and then just kind of walk us through what you guys did this fall. We can, you know, double down on some stuff that you really want to talk about, but just kind of give us an outline and then the messaging coming off of a national championship of what that was like.
Yeah, I think the first thing was, I obviously had a lot of questions, and again, with full transparency, it's always been that way with my team, where I told them, I was like, fellas, I don't know what exactly we're going to need to do, because I've never been in this position. And I was like, and if you're looking at me for answers, I said, I don't have them for you, because again, I've never been through this, just like you've never been through this. I think our ability to kind of have our philosophy and have our plan in place, and then being able to adjust and adapt as we got going, is what hopefully is going to separate us, and kind of has always been what we kind of can do here better than it feels like most. And so it was very interesting with the returners coming in with the mindset of, hey, we're going to repeat. I instantly told them, get that out of your head. The team philosophy is, our goal is to get back to Enid. That is the goal. Because if anything, we've learned that you have to have some luck to win a national championship at any level. Skill only will get you so far. And so we kind of started adapting that philosophy of, the goal is to set ourselves up to get back to Enid. I think the freshman group here, it was very quickly clear they were worried, they were scared, they were trying to adapt, and thought they were walking into some sort of buzzsaw situation where they're not allowed to ever make mistakes. And so we quickly had to get them to understand, we recruited you for a reason. You got to relax. You got to just play this game. And the other hard part was getting them to understand, everybody's coming at us with their best shot, even in fall ball, where truthfully wins and losses don't really matter, because it's about development and getting these guys to understand how to play college baseball and all that stuff. And the goal is obviously to have things kind of buzzing by the end of the fall. That was tough for some of our guys to understand that it's like, last year we were 6-5, I think, in the fall. And then we end up having 5 losses total in the spring. And it's like, they just all forget about what that was like being freshmen, and now they're sophomores. And so I think that was an interesting dynamic. And as the fall developed more and more, the confidence and the guys just getting comfortable started to really show out, and figuring out who's going to step up as leaders. And sometimes the guy you think is going to be ends up not being. And it's just everybody's with transfers, figuring it all out of how you just mesh this group all together. And you can't coach every team the same. And sure. I think from a coaching standpoint, that's always been an interesting challenge and dynamic. And, you know, reaching out to other coaches and schools and just trying to figure out, hey, what do you do after winning a national championship? And, you know, I've heard everything from it'll never be the same and it's ruined for you forever, to you'll at least know whether a team has it or doesn't have it, to don't change anything. And it's like, I think that's been the most interesting part for me. Is the weird part is, it's always going to be there. We're always going to have the ring. We're always going to have the trophy. But the excitement of new challenges feels like it's kind of re-energized this place of, we got one more year with the group who've won it. And then after that, it's none of these guys have ever even been to Enid. And it's like, all right, great. Let's get this thing going and just continue to kind of keep building on what we've already kind of created.
No, that's very cool. I love hearing that. So let's talk about, you know, so you mentioned the mentality. How do you guys win the fall as far as, you know, practice designs or like how you guys segment certain things or another? Because we've all got limited time. I mean, I know it's junior college and you've got more than a lot of teams have, and the ability to be able to coach the entire team. But what did you guys really focus on this fall? Or like, you know, you mentioned development being very high on your list of priorities. So how do you guys use the fall for development, and any ideas that you've got on how we can make our players better in the fall? I would love to hear.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for us is that first couple weeks, and it literally is weeks, it's having your practice plan and your philosophy of what you want your normal practice to look like, which we try to emulate the best we can of at the Division I level, what that practice would look like, where there are the simple fundamental things that every team does prior to the actual practice starting of the full team stretch, the teaching them literally the catch routine of the indie work prior to, where the infielders are all on their knees working glove work. And then the outfielders are out there working all their mini drills as the pitchers are going through their 45 minutes of arm care they all have nowadays prior to even throwing a baseball. And then over that 2 weeks, literally watching them play to realize, okay, this is what this team needs and doesn't need. Now, for us, obviously, we are extremely spoiled at the junior college level because, like you said, we do have the ability to practice a lot more than everybody else. And so we have the availability to truly kind of sit back and watch every guy individually and as a team realize what they can do well, can't do well, what they're going to struggle with. And I think, again, the staff I have around me, I think that's what we've kind of realized we can do better than most, is we can evaluate, assess, and then come up with an attack plan instead of just saying, well, this is exactly what we've done every year, so we're just going to keep doing that. To be honest with you, last year was probably the easiest job I've ever had from a coaching standpoint, because they all knew what they were doing. There was very little, hey, let's make sure we're in the right position. It's no, the shortstop's already telling the second baseman where he needs to be. And when there's a certain situation and we're doing drill sets of, we're yelling out situations, I don't have to stop practice and say, all right, guys, we got first and second here. It's late in the ball game. And it's like, we didn't have to do any of that because they just knew. This year, we quickly realized, okay, there's going to be more fundamentals of understanding the importance of hitting your cutoff guy, where there isn't the certain, obviously we had an All-American catcher, we had an All-American shortstop. So when you have those two things leading your team, it's pretty easy to know everyone's going to be where they're going to be. And so I think that was the biggest thing for us, was find a way to figure out what they need and then throw them into the fire in competitive type settings. It's just compete, compete, compete. And there has to be repercussions for failure, because that's how it works. If you fail in the spring, you lose a game. And so there was constant splitting up the teams of this team on this side, this team on this side. And we're doing random little mini games within baseball of just, there's repercussions for your actions. And I think that was the biggest thing. We watched freshmen get comfortable, and we watched sophomores take on leadership roles of people just don't like losing. And when you kind of force them as coaches into losing situations, it's always interesting to see how they kind of adapt and adjust to those situations.
I love it. Can you give us some examples of some of the mini games you guys do?
Yeah. Our favorite one is, like I talked about, with doing your job at the plate. We'll crank up the machine, work on some high velo where it's just tough pitches, and it'll literally just be two groups, and it's, all right, we're just doing standard rounds of BP, which every coach has their philosophy of, you know, get two bunts down, hit and run, move them over, guy on second, infield in, those type of situations. And we'll just say different situations to the hitters, and it's just a points-based system where you get a point for doing the job, you get a point for not, or you don't get a point for not doing the job, and then if you're just completely wrong and failed, then you can lose a point. That gets pretty competitive pretty quickly. We also obviously are firm believers in 27 outs, where we can split it up into two full different teams, and you go till someone gets it. Personal favorite of mine is when you do the 27 outs and they fail over and over, and then you get to end practice a little early and have a little blow up just to get them to understand that there is no clock on them. It's just a simple field it clean, throw it clean, and every type of situation. It's tough to play live games, but you just want to set up as many sim type situations as you can, where on some days we'll put actual base runners out there and do the exact same thing. We're like, all right, guy on first, like, what's the plan here? And it's just one of those things that I think those type of competitive juices, you wanted to get them flowing the best you can in any type of situation. So even on drill sets, it's, if there's just three first basemen over there and you're doing fungo picks to them where it's, hey, loser on this has to take the bucket back, or hey, the two guys who lose this one have to run a stadium before we start BP. It's just little tiny things where guys don't, like I said, guys don't like losing, and finding a way, and you can tell quickly the ones that it doesn't affect if they lose. And then you quickly realize, all right, that guy's not going to be part of this. He's just not, he doesn't have it. And I think that's always an interesting dynamic in the fall. I can tell pretty quickly on a guy we're going to lean on and a guy who just doesn't have it.
Sure. Well, so you get that to winter break. And then do you guys have exit meetings before they leave?
Yeah. So we meet a lot individually and with the team. I'm a firm believer in, you will not find, like I said, coaches, I think, that are as straight up and honest as we are with our guys. If you grabbed one of them at any point and said, hey, what does Coach Rizzo think about you, and where does he see you playing this year? They're going to give you beyond hyper-focused answers on my exact philosophy of what I think they are weight room, practice-wise, game-wise, where I think they could be long-term-wise, where I think I see them this year, where I see them next year, just because we sit down and want to be transparent with them so they're never caught off guard. I think it's a little bit refreshing for a lot of the guys. It is difficult when they leave this place to get them to understand that, like, that's not exactly how it's going to be at the next level, because it is a business and they aren't as close to those coaches just because you don't get as much time. So once we transition into, once the fall's done, we'll give them a couple weeks off, but we sit down with every one of them and tell them, here's the plan for this winter, and here's what we need from you if you want to play this spring. So they're not going in questioning kind of what they're doing. Every guy on their visit knows we do not cookie cut here at all. So every single guy's off-season plan is going to look completely different and kind of literally hyper-focused for them, both weight room and from a development standpoint.
Sure. No, that's really good. And so they get back, you know, first week or first couple weeks of January, and then you've got, you know, three weeks to a month to get them ready. What's that time look for you? Or time, what does that time look like for you?
Yeah, that's where our guys quickly realize the intensity that us as coaches and them as players gets amplified to a whole different level. And I think having the returners is always very important to that, because they emphasize to all of our guys who are now home, and oddly, we still have some around here. I think, again, that has to do with our culture, as I've seen probably 10 guys here today. They finished finals last Thursday, and those guys are going to stay here probably up till, I mean, basically Friday. And then they're going to finally head home, because they just want to be around other guys who kind of have that same philosophy, because they know when we get back, it's go time. There is no more development. There is no more, okay, well, we got it. It's like, no. It is go time now. We are preparing for a season. And I get them to hopefully understand that that's what spring training is. And if these guys all want to play at the highest level, it's like, I've been there. I've seen it. I've partaked in it. If it is a whole different animal when you get down there, there's no time to sit there and think, okay, well, if I keep my hands, it's like, hey, like we need results right now because we play in 3 weeks. And yes, you're going to keep developing and it all kind of grows where you hope it clicks prior to the season, but it's an interesting dynamic of we preach to these guys constantly. It is not my career. It is their careers. Mm-hmm. What they want out of it is up to them. We will never sit there and hold these guys' hands. We will give them all the tools in the world, but I want them to build their boats. They're building their own. And it's like, I'm going to show you and guide you, but I'm not going to do it for you. And we can always tell pretty quickly when guys get back on who put in the work over the winter and who didn't. And sure. I think it's never great when you think a guy is going home and you're a little concerned about his work ethic and what sure. he's going to kind of do or get back to old habits. Mm-hmm. But it happens. It happens every single year. And the part that isn't great is we don't exactly have a ton of time to get them back out of that.
Right.
And so there always is that risk when they're gone for this long stretch.
No doubt. You know, and there's so much to get into. And, you know, you obviously develop during season two, and I'm sure that you guys do some cool stuff there. So I'd love to hear, you know, you've got a weekend series and you might have a day or two of practice during the week. You know, how do you win those games, or how do you win those days? Just making sure you're covering what you need to cover, but you're also developing, you know, your fourth outfielder and your backup catcher and guys like that.
Yeah. I think for us, the biggest thing is we constantly will preach to our guys that when we have a weekend series and then we start the standard practice, which everybody hates, I get it. I was a baseball player. It's like, no one enjoys that. It's like, we're playing games. I want to keep playing games. We go back to the fundamentals. We go back to the early fall practices that, hey, this is what got us to this point. This is where you've developed. You can't forget about those. It's like, get back to that square root of the simplicity of this game. And the weird part is sometimes, depending off your win or you're losing, it's like sometimes it's getting back to realizing baseball is fun. And that's very tricky when things are not going well. But it's kind of the tough part and why we are coaches. It's like, we got to make sure these guys realize that this game's going to end at some point. So we got to enjoy every single time we can. From a non-player standpoint, or from a guy who's not getting as many ABs and things like that, we do take a lot of pride in the, all right, you didn't throw this weekend. You're going to throw live on the field to these five guys who either struggled this weekend or didn't get that bats. And I think that's something that we've really kind of bought into kind of pre-practice, pre-week. Like we look ahead realizing like, okay, these five arms didn't throw. We need them to throw live in a game because you don't have the opportunity to kind of just sit around and
sure.
yep. throw your bullpens. And like, oh, I'm good. I threw a pen. It's like, no, you need to compete. You need to get out there and pitch against our guys. And some of these guys right. who don't get as many at-bats, it's like, your time's going to get called. Like, it's inevitable that everybody has an opportunity here because injuries and things like that happen. It's like, you have to stay ready. And so we kind of really take a lot of pride in that side of it.
No, really good. I like that. And I think that's a way, you know, to your point, you can develop still guys on the roster that may not be playing every day, but they're still getting the competitive juices going and they're getting an opportunity to prove to you that they should be playing more, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think that's something that with our facilities that we have around here, it's always interesting because we can always tell quickly if the core group is great, but that secondary group is everything. And that's the part with this year has been very interesting because we have a lot of positions that guys are just battling for. And there's a handful of them that are here still now around guys who are going to be everyday starters. And you can just tell they're just like, all right, if we have a Tuesday midweek game and these guys didn't play and we get back from getting off the bus and I'm getting ready to leave the office, I hear the bats and I hear the machine fired up and I look down there and it's that group of guys getting their work in because they didn't play that day. It's like, as soon as I see that, I'm like, okay, we're good. We're cooking in the direction we need to, both for this year and for the next year. And I think, again, that was the biggest thing that these guys do not realize they had last year. And it's been interesting to watch these sophomores just continue to do that. And these freshmen now just grabbing on and saying, oh, okay, this is how we do things here. Where us as coaches, sure. it's great. I just can sit back because if I'm the one saying, all right, non-starters, get in there and take your rounds, like, that's not going to work. It's just not.
No, I love that. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, just give us some advice. So you went from a pitching coach to the head coach, and obviously that's, you know, I don't think you can prepare enough to be a head coach. I'm not obviously a college head coach, but going from an assistant to the head coach, there's a lot of different things that you have to really worry about. So I'd like to know, you know, you're thrust into it in your situation as an interim, and you're having to be able to manage practices in season. And instead of just worried about one particular group, now you've got to, you know, coach them all. And so talk to us about how you efficiently conduct practice in season, you know, as the season goes along. Cause I think that's part of that is feel too. Like, how are my guys feeling today? What do we need today? And just any advice on people that will be going through that over the next couple of months on how do we efficiently conduct practice in season? And you gave some different tips on development, but any other things that you want to add in regards to that?
Yeah, this is, I always am like, this is a tough answer, but it's 100% the truth, because to be honest with you, the number one thing is get good assistant coaches. That is the only reason I've had the success I have is my assistant coaches. If I did not have them, I do not believe that we would have won a national championship. And it's pretty easy for me to sit there and say, like, all right, well, I was an assistant coach once, so I understand kind of what it's like to be in those shoes. But you see it all the time where assistant coaches become head coaches and it doesn't work out. And most of the reason is because they then adjust to try and be something they weren't before, which probably led them to success, which is why they got the head coaching job. So for me, I firmly trust my assistant coaches with everything. And it's been one of those things that, like you said, I got to do 10,000 different things where maybe I just want to focus on practice, but it's like, but I can't, because I have to figure out the meals and the budgets and the travel and the scouting reports and all this other stuff that I'm like, don't want to do this, but you have to. And especially at the JUCO level, it's like, I got to make sure the umpires are paid. It's this little stuff that it's like, sometimes you don't want to do that. But if I didn't have the assistant coaches, then I'd be losing my mind trying to do 10,000 things at once. And I think from a pure development standpoint, like you talked about, you kind of hit it right on the head talking about understanding what your guys need and don't need. And I try to get everybody to understand when it comes to my style of coaching and the guys we kind of recruit from who they are as men, it's understanding. I want them to be able to talk to me, and I want them to actually know that I'm listening. I might not act like I'm listening and tell them, hey, I don't care what you think, but I heard it. And it's like that ability to adapt and adjust is everything. Because if we sit there and constantly tell them, adapt to every situation, adapt, 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 and then I'm sitting there not adapting as a coach, it's like, all right, well, now it's pretty hypocritical of me. And so I think in the spring, like you said, it's seeing my guys on the bus, seeing the energy when they get off. It's, hey, we don't have any guys doing extra work right now. They're dragging. And it's like, all right, let's, so where's the sound? It's like, there was times last year where the guy showed up for practice and we just played kickball, and people were like, what the hell are we doing? And there was a couple guys on the team who were mad about it. And I'm like, nope, like, we need to pump the brakes on the baseball, because you're putting hyper pressure on yourselves and looking too deep into it. We play an hour of kickball. And then I'm like, all right, if you want to stay and take BP, you can. If not, see you later. And I want them, if they don't want to be there, to be able to not be there. And it's like, that's tough, especially in today's world with this group of kids and this generation we're dealing with. Like, they got their beliefs and they know when they're feeling it and when they're not. And I had a player that I will never coach another kid who was like this kid, but he's our four hole hitter. And he would have days that he came up to me, and again, I still talk to him. Like, we're still pretty close. And he would be like, hey, coach, I'm not feeling it today. So I just have to scratch him and not play him, which is pretty not old school, where I'm just scratching this kid because he's not feeling it. The weird part with him was he's then going to be the best guy ever on the bench. And then halfway through the game, if he's like, give me an AB, I then have to feel out if he's just saying that because we're losing, or he's saying that because now he's locked in and wants to get it going. But it became a very real thing where guys saw my relationship with him, and then it evolved into last year having success because these guys could see, okay, we can actually communicate to our coach what we're feeling, and he's going to actually hear it to some extent. But again, it all comes back to recruiting the right guys, where there's plenty of kids out there who are like, oh, cool, this coach is just going to let me not play if I don't want to. It's like, well, no, but there's sure. always outliers in every situation.
Right. Well, that's you knowing your guys too. I mean, that's a big part of it, the relationships that you build. And I'm sure you wouldn't do that for 99.9% of the rest of the players that you'll ever have.
Yeah, I will never coach another kid like that. Again, I think he's, again, yeah. it's, if he was here, he'd be laughing because he knows exactly that's who he was. And everybody mm-hmm. knows exactly who he is. Anyone who knows him knows who that is. The whole athletic department knows that's who he is. It's like he was one of one, and he left a legacy here, and he was kind of oddly the brick that started this whole entire thing. That without him, I would not be, and we would not have had the success. So it's like there will never be another guy like him.
Very cool. So with that, you know, anything you guys change or anything that you feel like, especially with this group, or even like the group that you took to Enid for the first time, what is preparing for the postseason like? Because I'm sure last year's group would have been different from the first year group that you went with and that, you know, had never been before. So what is kind of knowing your team and then knowing what they need in preparing for the postseason like? Because like I said, how did you guys prepare for the group that hadn't gone, right? And hadn't been there and had players that are there or even been there in a few years versus how you prepared last year with the guys that knew exactly what they needed to do to get there and knew what that feeling was like?
Yeah, I think the first step of getting the guys to realize what it took to get there was a lot easier from the standpoint of, as a coach, every coach comes from a different background. And obviously, if you have a success of winning as a player and then it kind of carries over to a coach, it's easy to sell them on, hey, trust me, this works because I've done it. I don't know if I would have been able to do that at a different place, because it was easy for me to be like, hey guys, I know what it takes to get to Enid because I did it as a player. And so I know what it looks like from your guys' viewpoint. And so I think we knew what it would take to get there. And we watched previous teams during the time dogpile on our own field to go to Enid. And it was like, you had to figure out what it took to get these guys to just buy into the simplicity of what it takes to get to the World Series. And it's literally the simple things of, if you don't beat yourself, you got a chance, strictly based on the talent that we have here. And getting them to buy into that made it pretty simple once we had the group we did. That year we went undefeated in conference, and we'll never ever do that again. I don't think that still is going to be one of those things. And I'm like, I don't know how that happened other than luck. But it was like that group just buying into, there was no panic ever. We're down 7-0, and they're like, no, we're good. We're going to stick to our fundamentals and just slowly chip away. And they just kept doing that. And so then getting there, oddly, once we were there, it's like, okay, now what? And hand up as a coach, I'm like, I don't know. This is as far as I've gone. I'm like, so let's see how it goes. We'll keep doing what we've been doing, and we'll go from there. Well, we quickly realized those little cracks in us as a team that everybody sees as a coach. You know what you're good at, and you know what you're bad at. We knew what we struggled with, and they got exposed so quickly out there that first year. So returning next year became pretty simple because that group knew what it took to get there, and now they knew what it took to win there. And so we kept getting last year's group to understand, what are you bad at? What do you struggle with? What is this group's negatives? So we can understand they're going to get exposed when we get to the World Series. We'll take care of the rest. Know what the rest. It's like, you can't just concentrate on, well, we're really good at this, so we'll hyper-focus on that, only worry about that, and it'll outweigh the negatives, because it won't. And oddly, we gave our third baseman a hard time, but he had one error in every single game at the World Series, and we won every single game of the World Series. And so when he had the one game or the one error in the championship, we started laughing. We're like, all right, there it is. Got the one out of the way. Now we roll. Because we just bought into the philosophy of, you're going to make mistakes. It's not compiling them into multiple mistakes, because that's what cost us the first time. And they realized that very quickly. And it was kind of, again, full circle when that kid's the one that fields the final out and makes the throw to first base. And
oh, I love,
like,
that. All right.
I'm like, that is about as perfect as you can get.
Yep. The game knows.
It always does.
So let's get into, so you guys dogpiled last year, which is very, very cool. And, you know, congrats again to such a really cool ring chasing moment that you guys got to experience. And thank you so much for sharing so much of what that group was like and, you know, what you guys did to get there. But I do have a couple quick hitters before you go. And, you know, the first one is, what is a drill that your players love that we can steal from you?
Again, with the competitive juices, from a pitching coach standpoint, my favorite one, tennis ball drill. Make them go through the full entire windup like they're throwing a pitch. And as a coach, you get to kind of pepper a tennis ball at them pretty firmly. And you tell the pitcher, don't let it get by him. Pitchers don't love doing PFPs. I get it. But the tennis ball drill, it is great when there is something on the line. And especially inside the monotonous of the winter practice. Mm-hmm. It's great. The guys love it. They request it. Some are good at it. Some are very bad at it. And it's one of those things that it's just getting away from, we played catch, we stretched, we did some cardio, we did some conditioning. It's like, give them something different. From a hitting standpoint, the ground balls the other way rounds, for us, that drill is kind of everything when we are outside. Because if you can hit the ball the other way, we firmly believe you can hit the ball anywhere. And the opposite of oddly, where we have a ton of coaches out there teaching, you know, elevate the ball and hit the ball in the air, and there's a lot of success there. It's basically the reverse of that, because every guy comes in here trying to do that. And it's like, that's fine for some, but it's the adjustability and being able to do anything in any type of situation. So personally, that's one of our favorite drills is, hey, it's three rounds of five, and I want you to hit every ball as hard as you can on the ground towards the second baseman with a high velocity machine. And it's just showing that you can actually do that.
Sure. No, that's good. Next question I have for you is, what's the latest thing that you've learned that's made you better at your job?
Latest thing that I've learned. I think it's oddly every single kid and every single person you coach is going through the exact same thing. And even if it feels like they're got it all together and they're going the right direction, it's like they all have that fear and doubt deep down inside them. I think I always kind of believe that it's like some guys just get it and some guys don't. And then I think I've realized with this group, especially when one guy after the next keeps coming in with kind of getting them to open up a little bit, it's kind of opened my eyes of, okay, this is how everyone is feeling. And I've always kind of struggled with that side of it. So I think that's something I've truly kind of bought into.
Oh, I love it. Then last one before we go is, what is something that you've implemented in your program that you feel like has made the biggest impact?
I think it's honestly being completely transparent to guys that everybody is going to be held to different standards, but we have a baseline of standards. And I think getting them to understand that like life is not fair. And so if you are the best player on the team, breaking news, you're going to be able to get away with more than the worst player on the team. And if that bothers you, you're going to really struggle just with life in general, because that's how it works. And I think actually being transparent to them has truly opened up their eyes, where it's like, well, he doesn't have double standards because he kind of told us that was the standards. And again, I think it's just about knowing your team and knowing your players. It's like, to me, that's been the biggest selling point that I've seen kind of work the best, is whatever your beliefs are as a coach, be transparent with your team on them. Don't try to play the game or play the mind game with them. Yeah, there's time and places for it, but it's like sitting there and just telling them, hey, here's how I'm feeling as a coach. Mm-hmm. They just buy in so much quicker. And we got 2 years here at the JUCO level to do it. And they just realize very quickly that you're being genuine, and then it allows them to be genuine. And then that's where the relationship beyond baseball kind of takes off.
And I love that. Well, Chris, I appreciate your time, man. And I'm so thankful that we were able to carve out some time to be able to do this. And I'll link your email down below. And so if anybody wants to get in contact with you, but I do want to give you the opportunity to, you know, speak with anybody and everybody who is listening. And is there anything else that you'd like to tell them before you go?
I appreciate you having me on. And obviously it's always fun doing things like this. It's just, it's one of those things where firmly believe in what you believe in, have your core things you can always go back to. And at the end of the day, if you kind of trust the process of what you're doing and get the right guys around you, and I can't emphasize to any coach listening, hiring good assistants and having talented baseball players, as simple as that sounds, it's kind of the most important thing to having success in this game.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.